Hey there, I'm Michelle Charrier, and this is the Retail Whore Podcast, the stories and lessons from a life in retail. Hello, hello. Welcome back, guys. It is so wonderful to have you here. I want to say one more time, thank you so much for tuning in every week. I will ask this, if you have a chance to leave a review for us both on Apple or our website, I truly appreciate it. It really helps us move up through the ranks, and I really want to keep this going, and that is a big part of moving the needle up. So that's my little message. Today's episode is with Robin Kramer. She's the founder of Red Boot Consulting, is a brand marketing maven, natural business nurturer, master of relationships, and a sales expert who has an impressive history with leaders in the retail industry that have built their brands on innovative merchandising and strong service cultures. I had the chance to meet Robin for all 30 seconds in an elevator in New York now. And I have to tell you, from right that point, I knew I really liked her. And to listen to her and the time that she spent in retail and her expertise, I know you guys are going to take a ton away from this. She also has a consulting firm called Flourish and Thrive Academy that anybody can take as well. I highly suggest you guys look into that. And she has something that she does every week, as I think it's called Jolt of Joy, that is a live Instagram. And it's just talking to other people, and it's just bringing joy to the industry. So if you have a chance, check that out as well. So without further ado, here is my interview with Robin Kramer. Robin, welcome to the Retail Whore Podcast.
Thank you. I'm so happy to be here.
I am so excited. We met briefly in an elevator in New York when you were being an influencer and I was an influencer for New York Now. And I wish I had more time to talk to you, but I'm so happy I have a chance to get to know you now.
I look forward to future conversations with you.
Yes. So tell everyone a little bit about yourself and your brand, Red Boots, Red Boot Consulting.
Well, I come from actually a big retail and wholesale background. My mom had a store when I was growing up. I worked in stores. I studied retail marketing and management in college. Wow. I did independent studies with Rich's Department Store way back when. Wow. I did an independent study in Australia with retail stores there like Esprit and David Jones. And I'm just fascinated by product. I love the vendor and buyer relationship, and I love stores. And right after college, I went and worked for The Gap, Crate and Barrel. I worked for Williams-Sonoma Division for all of their concept. Mm-hmm. And then I was hired by Old Navy, kind of went back to the Gap family. And it was when Old Navy was just on fire and growing and had this wonderful experience of being with a brand that was like, oh, we're going to open 17 stores in one day. And it kind of experienced that excitement. Mm-hmm. And with the structure of corporate retail, I loved it. And then I went to work for one of my best friends who had a paper company, and she did handmade books and albums and wedding albums and baby books. And she did a journal for Oprah. When Oprah had her show, wow, at her store, she was the journal that they carried. So I had the pleasure of working with Oprah. We worked with the White House on some things.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah. So it was really, it was kind of like that higher end, and Kate's Papery in New York and Neiman's. So I had a kind of a really wonderful taste of what it was like to kind of the behind the scenes of the stores. And then after Molly West Handbound Books, I went to work for Dog-Eared Jewelry, and I was the director. Oh my gosh. Are you familiar with Dog-Eared? Love Dog-Eared. And, you know, the owners are great. And I was their first sales director, which was super fun. And the company grew 800% in the 5 years I was there. It was a wild ride. They were just ready. You know, they had been in business for 14 years. They had brought in a director of operations and production, and then they brought in me. So the two of us, my friend Inta and myself, like, we worked really well together. So they just let us loose and said, you guys work your magic. And
wow.
I mean, there were a lot of mistakes made and a lot of wins. So was that with them for 5 years in Los Angeles. And then my dad was not doing well. So I decided to start my own business. And that's when Red Boot Consulting happened in 2010. I can't believe it's been 13 years.
Wow. So, okay. How long were you, like, where is Dog-Eared now is the question. Like, and were you there the whole entire, like, you were there 5 years?
I was there 5 years. They were already a 14-year-old company when I was with them. They are absolutely still in business. In fact, I just talked to the owner a few weeks ago, and they have, they're still doing a beautiful job, and it's still made in the U.S., and
It's so funny because you said that name and I love that name. And I were just, and I'm sitting here like, I have not seen that line in so long.
Well, I think also too, they were the first to do carded jewelry with message and they're not anymore. And I think that's the other thing, you know, because they were the first to do a Make-A-Wish where, in fact, I'm wearing wearing a Make-A-Wish necklace. So it's on a silk beard. It's a charm and the whole thing was that you put a necklace on and when you make a wish and then eventually it will wear off. And that's what sold me on the company. I was like, oh my God, disposable jewelry. And no one's going to get mad that that it breaks because your wish, the power of intention I loved. And so it was really fun to be a part of that. But yes, they are definitely still in business, but they, you know, so many other businesses have taken and done the carded jewelry. So staying ahead of that curve is, I think, challenging too. You know,
I can imagine. I mean, it's like the fashion industry. Once you get knocked off, it's like you just keep moving forward. What does growing 800% look like? I mean, that's insane.
It was crazy. But crazy exciting. It meant that production, you know, really putting systems and processes in place to be able to accommodate that. And, you know, working with the retailers, at one point we were working with Macy's, Bloomingdale's, Von Maur, South Moon Under, Neiman's, all of these department stores, Anthropology, so larger chain stores. We were working with a lot of these stores and those typically buy much earlier than the boutiques and smaller stores. So it's just kind of like balancing out of we have great relationships with our casters, we, you know, really train the production team. And my hat goes off to Inta, who really oversaw production and operations, because I could sell easily. I love the product. And that was super easy for me. But if you you can sell, but if you can't produce and ship, you're screwed, right? So there were definitely some hiccups, but we worked really well together of like, okay, how can we make this work for production? There were definitely times that there were more boxes being shipped out than there was room for boxes. When I started with Dog-Eared, we were in these like little bungalow apartments in Venice Beach that weren't really made for a company. It was, you know, we were blowing fuses all the time. And I mean, it was quirky. It was definitely quirky Venice. And then the owners bought a building and we thought, oh, we'll move into it and grow into it. And within the first like 3 to 6 months, we had taken the whole thing over.
Wow.
And at one time, I think production just alone, there were around 75 people in production. So it was amazing. It was exciting. It was a lot of work, but it was also a lot of fun. We had a great team.
You must have been running on adrenaline like 24/7.
Totally. And I was doing 9 shows a year, trade shows. So we were doing E&K Accessory Circuit, which was
That show.
Such a great show. It was like the show.
I know, I miss that show.
And then we did New York Now, we did Atlanta. We did Vegas a few times, but Vegas really hadn't taken off. So, and then I would meet with Nordstrom at least once a year, sometimes twice a year. And then trying to think of their other shows, that might be it. And then personally, I would go to shows just to check them out too. So I would.
Do you have a husband or a partner or family? Like, we had Val from Pixie Mood on, and her show schedule is just insane. And she's got kids. Like, I don't know how you do that.
I don't know how people do that either. I don't have kids. I have dated people on and off, but it does make it tricky when traveling, and usually traveling like gone all of January or all of February, just depending on when the shows hit. So it just depended. I have a lot of family in New York. So going to New York, and I had done an internship in Atlanta, so I had friends there. So, you know, even if you're in this industry long enough, you make friends everywhere. So it was always, I always think going to a show is like camp. Get to, you know, see people you really have these camp relationships with. You get excited to see them every, you know, twice a year and catch up. And it's wonderful.
Oh my gosh, I love it. I have to ask you about Australia really fast because David Jones is amazing. And I used to work, I was a model for a Spree when I was like,
oh, that's so cool.
So what was that? What were you doing for them?
Well, when I was in college, I was determined to go to Australia and I made my own internship and I stayed with the family some of the time. And then traveled the rest of the time. And I had I had a lot of chutzpah. I was like, I want to go here. I couldn't get a working visa. So I just interviewed these companies. I went into the Spree corporate offices. I talked with the buyers at David Jones. I mean, there was another one called, I think it's called Sports Girl, that chain store. So I just went around Australia.
Wait, you just flew there on your own and then just said, okay, I'm going to go in and start interviewing. Oh my God, you do have chutzpah. Damn.
I don't know how I talked my professors into letting me do this, but I was like, I just presented what I wanted to do. And I found, you know, I just thought Australia, it was interesting that Esprit was so big there. I was fascinated by that. And I don't know, I created my own internship.
That is amazing. So how did you started Red Boot? How did you come up with the name for one?
Well, I'm a Texan. I grew up in Dallas and I used to ride in rodeos and not many people know about that.
Gosh.
And I love cowboy boots. I have worn boots. I think they're the most comfortable pair of shoes I own. And I have a thing for red boots. And when I was getting ready to start my own business, I had my friend Molly, who I'd worked for, Molly West Handbound Books, when she sold her company, you sell your name.
Yeah.
And not that my consulting company, I was going to prep it and sell it one day, but there was just something about that that just always stuck with me. And I didn't want it to be my name.
Yeah. So a lot of people have said that.
So a friend of mine, actually, who one of the founders of Viv and Ingrid Jewelry, we were walking down the street. And I was like, I just don't know what to call my business. And she looked me up and down and she said, how about Red Boots? Because people know you by your boots. And I thought, oh, well, that's cool. And I looked it up and Red Boots was taken and Red Boot wasn't. So it's been Red Boot.
I love it. So you've had your hand in all kinds of retail, apparel, gifts, which makes you like, that's one thing I can say with me coming to the table that with people I work with, I've had my same thing, my foot in the door of both apparel and gift. And it definitely gives you a leg up in understanding how each works separately and also how well they work together. What do you, when with your consulting, talk to me about working with clients and what it looks like to work with you?
Well, I think kind of going back to my love of just product and craftsmanship and fascination with, you know, what makes something work versus something else and why this store instead of that store. And I think when I you've been in the industry long enough, you have these connections all over. And I think probably one of my superpowers is that I can look at a product and picture stores that you would fit, the product would fit well with. And I've just accumulated kind of all of that over the years. Working with me, what I like to do is I like to do an exploration call first, because I don't want someone to work with me if they're not interested after, 20 minutes of talking with me and they're like, oh, you don't jive with me, or vice versa. I don't want to work with somebody who I don't think I can help. So I look at their business as a whole, and I also talk with them about what is their vision and version of success, because everyone is different.
Yeah.
And it looks completely, if they're trying to compare themselves. In fact, I was talking to a client who was doing like 30 shows a year, both combining trade shows and retail shows, and she didn't have time to breathe. I was like, but what do you want? She goes, well, I want to be successful. And I was like, well, that's random. That tells me nothing. So just really helping people hone in on really what they're wanting currently and long term, and helping them map out how to get there.
So you work with jewelry is a big component of who you work with. And are they brand new lines that are up and coming, or are they lines that have struggled like this one where they do 30 shows and yeah, they still want, you know, they're not seeing it as successful. Like do you work with apparel lines as well?
I haven't worked as much with apparel, but I have worked with other accessories, and I've actually done, I had a client who does fine art, you know, paintings and things. I've worked with them. I think just because of my gallery experience too, mostly jewelry. So in 2012, I co-founded Flourish and Thrive Academy, which is an online educational platform for jewelry designers.
Love that.
And my co-founder, Tracy Matthews, is a jewelry designer, and we met at E&K Accessories. We had booths right across from each other, and we would just share information. And in 2012, after the recession, and she struggled with her business and ended up closing her jewelry business, she came to me and she said, you know, I don't want anyone to go through what I had gone through. You know, if I set up my business the right way, I wouldn't have had to close it. So she reinvented herself. We started Flourish and Thrive, and we wrote courses. And our first course that we wrote is Laying the Foundation, which is relevant for any product-based business, but we were gearing it towards jewelry, really honing in. Because, you know, my background with dog-eared and really diving into that, and then she has always been in jewelry. But I think the information is all relevant to whatever product-based business you're in. You know, you've got sales, you've got marketing, you want to look at your inventory components, you know, like all of the things that you want to evaluate and keep your eyes on and create systems and processes for. It's all kind of speaks the same language.
So somebody could essentially either work with you personally or do it by the course. And is how many segments are in the course? Is it buy them by the course or the whole?
It's one thing. So I, in 2017, I took a step back from kind of the end of 2017. I took a step back from Flourish and Thrive because my dad wasn't doing well. Wow. And Tracy has done a phenomenal job. Every so often the course gets revamped and revitalized just because things have changed in 10 years. You know, it's a different marketplace now.
Yeah.
How do you think? Social media. I mean, when I started in the industry, you know, my trade shows from 2001, that was the only way you were going to get in front of buyers is to do a trade show. And you had to wait to be accepted to a show. And it's just, everything's changed. I was just talking to a client earlier. We were talking about FAIR, and FAIR has created some new kind of, I guess, rules that they're getting ready to implement. And if we didn't have online platforms, a lot of stores wouldn't have a way to buy, because in the last few years we've had COVID. So everything's always morphing and changing. And so Tracy does a really great job of keeping that updated. I took a step back to focus on my family. And then, you know, I really got to look at when major things happen in one's life, I think, you know, you evaluate everything. What I learned about myself is that I really love the more kind of, if I'm going to work with somebody, I want to know everything. Because in this kind of entrepreneurial, you know, business, people always say, oh, I need balance. And I believe there is no such thing as balance. I think it's a crock of shit. I think it's about balancing. I think there's some days you're going to have more personal stuff. Some days you're going to have more business stuff. And it's just kind of, you know, not getting stressed out about it and just kind of, you know, taking, okay, what do I have to do now? What's going to work? And do it, and really helping people navigate through that. So I started, I really focused more on the Red Boot Consulting, and I started an intensive mastermind, if you will, for a maximum of 12 designers that they have to go through an application process. They are committed to working with me for a year. What's really fun is my friend Kelly Hedgepeth, who I worked with at Dog-Eared, who is one of my hires at Dog-Eared, who is, I've seen her grown. I mean, it's so fun. I've known her. She came to Dog-Eared in 2006, you know, and is a systems and processes person. She loves a good spreadsheet. So it just so happened she was getting ready. She had taken a break to be with her two-year-old, and she was ready to come back and do some work. And we reconnected, and now she does the intensive with me. So we do it together, and it's such a nice just partnership with how we work with the designers. And really, it's high touch. And what I personally have found working with coaches is I need a good kick in my ass to be held accountable.
Yes.
And there are a lot of classes and courses out there that are great, but if you're going to pay a lot of money and not do them, what's the point?
Yeah.
So the intensive that we do is like, you can't hide from us.
Tell me a little bit about it, because what I've heard so many, like there's so many masterminds out there, and I so want to join one, but I'm exactly what you just said, like sign up for something and not finish because, you know, I have a window of time where I'm not crazy busy, which I'm coming out of. And I'm literally this weekend leaving for my first like travel again, starting the show season. And it's like, you know, everything that I started, including my own gratitude practices and things that I take a few minutes, just goes out the fucking window. I mean, it's like, so what does a mastermind look like? Because I've always wanted to do one, and especially one that you're accountable. What does that look like?
Well, for what we do for Red Boot is that, as I said, it's an application process, and that it isn't just you apply and either you're accepted or not. You apply and we have conversation with you, because I want everybody to come in knowing exactly what's happening. We do a group call every month with a focus on a specific topic. And if, you know, and I listen to the group, if they're like, you know what, we need more. So for example, in May this month, we had an editor come in and talk about press and, you know, what she does and how she does it and all that kind of stuff. And the group was like, this is great, but we want to know how to write things. We want to know how to present. Yeah. So I brought in another person who does PR and is actually an instructor at FITM in Los Angeles who did PR for Dog-Eared. She did a little class for them. And, you know, so bringing people in that's going to help them grow and teach. And like I said, I always like listen to the group of what do you need more of? So we have specific topics that we go through during the month. We also do at the beginning when we work with, when you join, is that we look at your business and we do a strategy session that's usually a couple hours, and we set up your goals for the year. We also have a sales dashboard and a marketing dashboard, which we evaluate your sales, because one of the things that I find a lot of creatives do is they, you know, make, and then they're not paying attention to their sales. Like, oh, we're selling a lot. Where are your margins? Are you profitable? You can sell a lot, but if you're not profitable, you don't have a business. So we look at, you know, we look at your margins. We evaluate, you know, we want you to get ahead of the curve instead of, you know, 6 months down the road going, oh my gosh, my business isn't going well. Or, oh my gosh, I'm, you know, killing it. And I couldn't figure out why I couldn't catch up. So we really stress the importance of looking at numbers. We also look at your inventory system. We do website audits. We really dig in to everyone's business. And if we don't know, you know, if we don't have answers for you, we find experts who do. So for example, I'm not a Shopify expert, but I have Shopify experts that I will give you, we provide resources, and then you have the conversation and decide which person you want to go with. And I always say, like, don't just talk to one person, you know, have multiple. And for the jewelry specifically, we have resources for casters and CAD designers and, you know, the kind of what they need, suppliers for components.
Wow.
That stuff. So you don't have to go searching for it. We have it for you. But this is from years, I can't believe, like 10 years, more than that. I started working for Dog-Eared in 2005. So just, you know, knowing people in the industry, but really looking again, it's like your individual business. What do you want? Let's get a plan to get you there. And I really believe too that, you know, it's important to hear what other people are doing and what's working for other people. So that's why I like a small group to share that. And, you know, everyone has access to call or text or email. You know, if something, I just had a client who is looking for a rep and she wasn't really sure how to go about interviewing. So jumped on the call with her and we did it together. So she could also learn. We do role playing. I have the designers come to Dallas where I'm based and they come for 3 days in, it's usually March or April. And we have 2 days of workshop and we have 1 day of going to store visits. And this year we went to Stanley Korshak and my mom had worked at Stanley Korshak for 13 years. So Stanley Korshak's like going to home to me. So the jewelry buyer there is amazing. She's loved, everyone's always so generous. And the head of HR for them used to be my babysitter when I was growing.
Oh my God. So you really do know everyone there.
It was really funny. And then we also went to the Conservatory, which is a great store. And then we went to Matthew Trent, who is an established jewelry designer that's been in business for over 30 years. So I really like to show them kind of, and Dallas is such a shopping mecca. I mean, I always joke that growing up, shopping is a sport here. You know, that's what we did. But I really like to show the designers kind of different stores that have been incredibly successful and what are they doing and how do they look and feel? And also, these are stores that can sell a very high price point. And, you know, I think people shy away from their value and their price. And it's always good to see that there are stores out there that are selling luxury. And, you know, $150 necklace is not a big whoop to a lot of people.
Yeah.
You know,
especially at where I am here, it's like, well, that's nothing.
Yeah.
Do you cover merchandising with them as well?
I do. Merchandising is so key. And also brand consistency across the board, doing shows. And art shows are going to be different than trade shows and how you merchandise for it. Yeah, we look at all those things. And also too, Dog-Eared had a very extensive line to the point where we're like, God, we have to discontinue some things. Even if they're selling, sometimes you have to just, you know, let some things go so you can see what the best sellers are so you can really manage your line.
Okay. I want to talk about that for 1 second because I have more people and lines that I can count on my hands that do not want to. And this is where editing is so important because my phrase is always like, if you don't take out some items and you feel like you need to have it all there, the old stuff is choking out your new stuff. Like kind of no one can see it. And it is next to impossible for some lines to grasp that. And it's like, you know, I mean, Peking, I love, and they thank God they finally started editing. But we would have doilies still from when Cindy and Derek's dad was there, and we'd have pillows that have been on the line for no joke, like 15 years. And it's like, I would always like, if it's been on the line for 15 years, everyone's seen it. No. Someone always sees it and they wanted to bring it out. It's like, oh my God.
It's cannibalizing their business. It is absolutely cannibalizing their business. And the thing I'll tell my clients is that, take it away and then bring it back as like from the vault of and do a special limited edition and sell the crap out of it.
Make it a scarcity, like scarcity item, or this is going to be, you know, retired or.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Thank you for saying that because you just validated what I've, because it's the hardest thing for people to edit and know. And it's like, it truly, if you get down to it, it's like you can't see the new stuff if you have all the old stuff and it's like,
you can't get a read on something. You cannot. Yeah. And it will make you crazy to try and manage it all too. So keep it clean. And it doesn't mean you can't bring it back at some point. In fact, I'll never forget. I was sitting in a meeting with Nordstrom and they were saying, well, here's what we like to do when something's selling gangbusters. A lot of times we'll take it off the floor for like a year and a half and create excitement again and bring it back. And we
Brilliant. Hi, guys. I hope you're enjoying this episode. Now for a message from today's sponsor. Guys, so many of you over the course of the last couple of years have sent me DMs or emails asking me for any other podcasts that I suggest, or are there any videos that I know of or any merchandising books? So we finally created MC Design Academy. It is a YouTube channel that I am doing displays and breaking them down step by step with real levels of inventory to help you and inspire you to create new displays. They are short, bite-sized lessons. You can watch one or you can watch the whole entire episode to do your display. But my hope is that it brings you inspiration. It kind of gives you another couple of ideas of how to do things. And best of all, it's like having me in your back pocket, helping you do merchandising and display right alongside of you. So go to the YouTube page for MC Design Academy and click subscribe and let me know what you guys think. Now, back to our episode.
Yeah, that's incredibly smart. And it's so off the rail that not a lot of people would think about doing that, because everyone's so like, well, it's selling that we need, what's going to stop the sales and the numbers are going to drop.
I know, it's the creating that fear of missing out. I mean, that is brilliant marketing right there.
Yeah.
Let's take it away and also say this is going away, or we've got new coming in. And then bring it. I just love the idea of bringing it back and making it a limited edition, or, you know, just a short amount of selling time, because then it becomes exciting and wonderful. And if it's been on there for 15 years, by God, you need to take it off.
Lord, everyone has seen it. And if the people that haven't seen it, if you have a catalog, keep it in the catalog. I mean, they have seen it over the 15 years. They certainly will remember it as soon as they see it in the catalog. And thank God, I'm so happy that they finally listened. And it almost swung the other way. They almost edited so much away. I'm like, and then I found myself like, we don't have anything now. And they're like, well, you want us not to have as much. And now we don't. And I'm like, oh. What is the biggest? Well, one, I want to go back to, because I love the fact that you guys really get into the mastermind people's businesses, and you look at their numbers, because I think you hit it on the nail on the head about numbers no one wants to look at. Like, it's like that uncomfortable thing. Like, if I don't look at it, then I don't have to worry about it. And, you know, not really looking at like the real numbers of after everything, you know, everything's been taken out. Like, what is your real profit margin? And I love that you make them accountable. Do you have much pushback? Because I know there's a consultant that hers hasn't aired yet. She's in Australia, and she is very in your face and very like you have to the point where she said one of her girls is like almost scary. Like, you know, it's like, oh God, I have to answer it. But I feel like some of us, me including, like that is my Elisa, who everyone deals with when you sign in, is Elisa is my like, where is this? We need this. And I can only say I'm busy. I'm at the show. And she's like, you need to find 15 minutes and you need to do it. Like, but because I will be that person that is forever like, like all the excuses. And to have somebody really be there where you have to be accountable for is slightly scary. So do you have pushback from people like, Jesus lady, back off?
I have been told that I am a good therapist and good cheerleader. So I never want someone to be scared. And I have had people say, oh, I'm scared to talk to you about this. And I was like, no, I don't want you to be scared. This is your business. I want to help you with your business. We have it. So for this group this year, they were just having trouble finding time to work administratively. Like, oh, I really need to work on my numbers. Well, so we decided, okay, every Monday, and I should say they decided that they wanted an admin day where everyone comes, whoever wants to, can come together on Zoom, and we hold space for that. And we do work sprints. So everyone joins, says what they're working on. And then we say, okay, and I time it for an hour. And then we check in after an hour of where they are. So that means they're getting their financials done. Maybe they're following up with customers, whatever it is that they need to work on, but they're doing it together. Because sometimes, I don't know about you, working at home, I can easily, oh gosh, I got to do the laundry. I'll just throw it in. You know, I can easily get distracted. But if I have committed to a work session with, you know, other people and I'm on Zoom, we silence each other, but, you know, we'll
check. So you guys are all on Zoom together. It's all silence and you all are doing your own admin things together while you're all, that's kind of brilliant.
It's great. I'm not always able to host. So I set up the call. And then if I have to go and take another call or something, I just make somebody else, someone volunteers to be the host. And I just turn the call over to them or the Zoom over to them. But they've been great. Like the people who show up, you know, get work done and it's been great for them. And we do, you know, we have people all over the country. We have a designer in Canada and we have some people on the West Coast and East Coast and in between. So, you know, we figure out a time that would work for everybody and it doesn't work always for everybody, but, you know, they schedule it in and it's been super helpful for the ones who are taking advantage of it. So
do you find that creates a habit where they're able to do it then after that on their own?
Hopefully. I mean, you know, it's like, I always think too, all these things that I think are a crock of shit, and excuse my French.
But, oh, please. You're really on this podcast.
But, you know, I need balance in my life. I was like, that's such a funny thing for me to hear. But the same thing with, you know, a habit takes 21 days. I think that is bullshit. I think you consciously have to get up and say, this is what I'm going to do. You commit to it. Exercise, I get up and I work out every day, but it is something that I was like, you know, a lot of days I'm like, oh God, I've got to do this. But once I do it, I'm like so happy I've done it. So it's just kind of doing it anyway. And I think accountability helps. You know, I have an accountability partner for my workout. Having accountability for doing those financial things that we might not want to do, you know, so that's, you just make a conscious decision to do it. And it's not easy.
Yeah, no, the whole workout thing completely went out the window when I was doing setups. It's like, we're doing like 26,000 steps in a day. And then, you know, I'm away from my family and my dogs. And, you know, I'd come home and it's like, I had perfect amount of time to go do it. I just was caught up in such a weird, so sad. I'm not here. It was just like, I guess when I think about it, like my blinders were on just to get this job done and get, you know, get it wrapped up, go back home and get that. I mean, I had time to do it. And that's now. It's like, it's been like, I have to make sure I put me first because I put everything else first, I realize. And now it's like, okay, you have to do this. So at least when I get to Vegas next month or whenever it is, I will have this in motion. And it's not like trying to drag myself, like starting from scratch.
Well, you know, something that I did when I go to trade shows and, you know, people are always like, oh, let's meet for dinner. Let's meet for coffee. Let's meet for breakfast, whatever. I always say, let's meet for a walk and talk. And
oh, I love that.
Yeah, I'll meet before the show and do, you know, so I always try to fit it in that way too. Even if I can't like go to a gym and work out, I'll, you know, let's meet. And that's probably one of my favorite things to do, go on a hike or a walk and talk. And you're getting the visit in and you're getting your exercise in too.
I love that idea. I wish I knew enough people when we're in setup to be able to go, let's go walk. Tell me about what are some of the biggest stumbling blocks that you see with brand new lines that are, you know, either brand new lines or lines that are have been going but are having troubles getting off the ground?
I think the biggest ones are pricing, making sure that they're pricing appropriately. And a lot of times brands are undervaluing and not pricing enough to have that margin to have a living. So I would say price is a big one. I would, I'd also say that, you know, I'm amazed when people just don't like the word sale. Like they don't want to do sales. They don't want to call. I think picking up the phone is one of the best tools out there. I think coming from a place, people, you know, when I was hired by Dog-Eared, they gave me business cards that said director of sales. And I really wish they had said director of relationships or relationship builder, because I never think of myself as a salesy person. You know, I always think I want to find out about the store. I want to learn about them. And I'm really trying to teach people that if you come from a place of service, if you come from a place of helping someone, if you come from a place of wanting to learn about them and their needs, the sales stuff eventually happens.
Yeah.
And it's in you're building the relationship and it makes it easier.
Yeah.
Quite honestly, you know, I find it really unrealistic that you can meet somebody and they immediately buy from you. It happens, yeah. But I would say just go in there and try to learn about them and be, you know, do your homework, research. If you have stores that you're interested in, research the stores, follow the stores, make comments on their, you know, their Instagram or other social media platforms. Know if you're at a show and they come to your booth, say something about why you like them, why yeah. you follow them, you know, start the relationship. It's like dating. I always joke around that about that, but it's like, you don't just jump into a relationship. You get to know the person and you develop a friendship first, hopefully.
Well, I think sales, and that's what, like I had, our very first interview here on the podcast was Kelly and Lowe from Kingfisher Road. And they're phenomenal sales. Like the two of them. And what I love so much about them is that their customers really love them and they really love their customers. And that's when I had my stores, that was the thing. It was like, I mean, like some of my kids babysat for some of the people that came and shop and totally. It's truly a friendship and a, you know, some people turn out to be like family. And I think that that is so important. And I don't think it's funny. It's somewhere lost along the way of there's either like new school thought and old school thought. And I think my thought process is very old school. Like
me too.
Pick up the phone or write a letter. It's very old school. Like now everyone wants to just send you a text, which just makes me insane. Like I mean, I know that people try and call stores and it's like, I'm so busy and they get blown off and they never get, but if you already know them and you're the foot in the door, isn't a call so much better than a text? Like it just feels so much more personal.
So much more personal. I can't tell you. I really miss Daily Candy. Do you remember Daily Candy?
Yes. Where did it go anyway?
It was bought and I don't know if it was ABC or NBC or something like that bought it and just
let it die.
I mean, there's Purewow and Refinery 29 and Pop Sugar and a bunch of other ones too, but that was just my favorite. And so I still get all these all these emails from these different websites and stuff that tell you like what's going on and what stores are happening. And if I see, but Daily Candy was so good about it, highlighting stores. And I'll never forget there was a store called Annie's General Store that was opening up in Brooklyn that's still there. Hmm. And I saw the article about the store and I picked up the phone and I just said, hey, I just read your article and it is great. Congratulations. I look forward
to... I bet you blew them out of the water.
Yeah. I mean, it's just, I wasn't calling to sell to them. I was calling to congratulate them. And I was really excited to see them. I asked if they were going to the New York show. They said yes. And I was like, oh, I'd love to meet you. You know, I'm with Dog Eared Jewelry, and they came by. They ended up buying, but that wasn't my purpose of the call. My purpose of the call is to
genuinely. I love that, and I think that that's so rare. And I will drum it into the ground a million times. Is that is the difference when it comes to customer service? When everyone starts like Amazon and blah blah, blah. It's like no. If your customer service. If you really care about your customers and you're really reaching out and you're sending them, you know, even a note to say hi and you're just reaching out. And when they come in, you know, their size and you pulled stuff. I mean, like if you know that they're not going to shop Amazon, it's like, I mean, maybe for their office supplies, but like if your customer service is like there, then you have nothing to worry about.
100% because people buy from people they like.
Yes.
Just hands down. When COVID hit, one of my clients, she has a store in Little Rock. She also sells wholesale. And she put together, she's like, you know, I'm not ready to go back to shows yet. But we were talking like, you know, send out a box of goodies, you know, send something to your top clients, to your top wholesale accounts. And she did such a beautiful job. And it wasn't, you know, it was probably a couple thousand dollars worth of, you know, materials and sending out and all is said and done. But it came back tenfold because she sent a handwritten note with each of things saying, you know, we hope you, you know, during this time that you guys are staying safe and healthy. And, you know, here's a little, you're in our thoughts and here's a little something from us to you. And it was so cute because she sent me a message and she said, this is from one of my clients who got the box. And he said, you know, never before have I received something so lovely. And, you know, we're so appreciated. And when we're back up and running and ready to purchase your My First Order, you know, they were so touched by what she had done. And, you know, it comes back. It always comes back in a good way.
I have a question because you said somebody that sells wholesale and retail. Kelly Kingfisher brought this up yesterday, and we're going to do a whole separate podcast on this. But one thing we run into, especially with apparel, some gift lines, but where the manufacturer also has their own retail site and they either underprice their retailers or they only mark it up to Keystone. And as we all know, Keystone is dead because like I said, this is that Jack Black, which you would make me create. We sold Jack Black at the pharmacy and they do holiday gift sets, which is great. But then they put a sticker on the front and it's exactly Keystone. And I remember asking the rep, like, so is Jack Black paying for our freight? Because we have to get our freight back. And it's like by putting it. And then, you know, she had said also the same thing that she's gone to shows and, you know, so she's smart about how now she asks. So you have a website. So what price are these at? And they're like, oh, $10 or whatever. And she's like, so you're only marking it at Keystone. And they're like, yeah. And she's like, okay, well, let us know when you raise your prices because, you know, retailers have rent and payroll and insurance and fraud. Yeah. I mean, so much in it. And what are your thoughts on that? And because it's not everybody, but it certainly is a lot. Like I'm always kind of blown away by that.
I feel like the industry standard is 2.5 now.
It should be. I even talked to retailers and they're like, really 2.5? I'm like, yes, where do you think your shipping's? Yes, you get shipping freight for free sometimes during show, but all the rest of the year, like you're paying freight and you have to, as well as like your payroll and everything else.
Well, and the designers who are selling wholesale, I always say like, you don't want to undersell your wholesale accounts. You just don't.
Yeah.
And I recommend 2.5. And they say, well, what if they sell it for Keystone? And I was like, well, a conversation. You can say my MSRP is 2.5, but you can make a decision. If they want to sell it for Keystone, that's their decision. But I said, typically people are selling between 2.25 and 2.5. And I would on my site, if I had a line and I had to wholesale accounts, I would do 2.5 markup because there are a couple of things. One is to your point, stores have stores. They have rent, they have packaging, they have staff, and I think of it as, you know, it's investing, you know, by supporting your retailers, you're investing in them. They're reaching out so many more people than you can reach out typically on your site. I mean, you know, you're selling to one person at a time. So yeah, I recommend 2.5.
Thank you. Everyone listening, please.
I'll tell you something that drives me bonkers is that it drives me crazy when I hear a designer say to a buyer, oh, you can go to my website and the prices are just half of what you see.
Yeah.
I was like, no, don't do that. First of all, don't make a buyer have to calculate. And it shouldn't be half of what you see. You know, give them their wholesale price. Have a line sheet. Or if you can have a website that has, you know, that's for wholesale, that it's, you know, protected and they have a passcode to get into so they can see the wholesale pricing. But that drives me crazy. Don't have a wholesale price and have a retail price. And it shouldn't be half of that.
Yeah. Kelly and I are going to have a whole separate conversation.
She's in Topanga, right?
Yeah. Well, she's on, I think it's Ventura Boulevard now. They moved. They have a bigger space. Oh, it's amazing. And that's what we talked about. Because when we first interviewed her, they were in the smaller space on Topanga. And then now they're in more of like a, I guess it's a strip mall, so to speak. But it's a big space, and they've got, I mean, men's, women's, kids. I mean, it's a big space. It's great.
Oh, fun. Well, when I go down to LA, I definitely want to check it out.
You have to.
I loved their little store that they had. I loved it.
They're amazing. I mean, I adore them. And that's why it was so nice yesterday to reconnect. Because I talked to them back and forth, and Kelly will DM me about, you know, the podcast or whatnot. But it's having them back on and talking to them. It was almost, I guess it's almost been 2 years now since their July 7th or something is 2 years for us. And it just to see the difference of then and, you know, going through COVID and all that other bullshit. It's like I'm so over COVID.
I do love seeing what retailers are doing. I am so impressed. You know, I had during the, especially at 2020 when everything kind of shut down and I had my intensive, the designers actually had amazing years.
Yeah.
Because people were online and buying. So, but I also had one of my clients who grew she added 26 stores to her wholesale account list in 2020.
Yeah. It was a weird gift, the pandemic. And I say gift because for those of us who travel and do shows and never have time off, all of a sudden it was like a mandatory vacation. But the other gift of it was this insane business that everyone did after. Not everyone, but by far and large, retailers did extremely well. Now, the real challenge, it seems like, because everyone I talk to is like, oh, we're so down. It's like, don't look at those numbers. Like, that's all like fake money. Like, it was an amazing year. It was an amazing gift. But you need to start looking at your numbers from 2019, not the last couple of years, because it's like fake money. I mean, it was like this amazing boost and this amazing gift. And you know, but now it's like back to reality. And I think that people are like really freaked out that the numbers, and it's like trying to back everybody off a cliff. It's like, no. It's really not like if you're above 2019, then you're where you need to be. Like, or even if you're level with that, it's like you're in a good place.
I couldn't agree more. And it was so exciting to hear that businesses were doing well, because I feel like people didn't know what to expect. And I also loved how, you know, vendors were really supporting the retailers and vice versa and doing, you know, I had one of the things I started in 2020 is I started a call and I call it Jolt of Joy.
I was going to ask you about that. That's the next thing.
because I just felt like we just need some goodness. We need to come together, and I'm still doing the call. So instead of every day, it is now twice a month. But what was great about it and continues to be is that it's open to everyone. And so I had, you know, I've had buyers on there, I've had vendors on there, I've had trade show folk, you know, people from New York Now and from American Handcrafted and Vegas and, you know, just all people in all different industry, but all in the, you know, either you have a store or you're selling product or you're somehow tied into the industry. And I had one friend of mine who used to have a product and now has stores. And she met so many designers that she started doing Meet the Maker events. Right. And great exposure for these designers that she didn't, you know, sometimes she would pick up their lines and sometimes she didn't, but she wanted to give them exposure, and it was great talking point for her, and it kept her audience of her customers engaged, and it was super fun. Like, I love the connecting people, and so I'm still doing that, and it's open to everyone, and it's free, and I just, you know, I think it's great to share joy.
How do people find out about it? Because I know, I believe it's on your Instagram that I've seen it, where you'll put it out there, you include the Zoom link, correct?
Yeah, the Zoom link is the same. It never changes. It's also, if you go to my website, redbootconsulting.com, and go under the community tab, it's there. It's the same. And it's the first Friday of every month and the third Wednesday of every month. And it's at the same time, which is kind of, I mean, I've thought about doing one in the evening, but it's just, you know, I have to do kind of what's easiest for me to.
Yeah, totally.
I was bending over backwards at some point. I was like, okay, this doesn't make sense for me. But it's been great. And we've had people from all over the world just pop on.
How many people are on a call at the same time?
It can be anywhere from, you know, 4 or 5 to 20, 25. I mean, it just really varies. I know. I always hold space for it though. Even if it's one person shows up, it's usually more than just one person, but I need to get better at emailing my whole list and reminding them. But I absolutely do it on Instagram. I post it.
During the pandemic, that's how the podcast started. It started with lives and, you know, interviewing, what are people doing? What's working? What's not? It gave people a place to vent and then, you know, and back to work and then forgot about it. Then all of a sudden I was like, I'm going to do a podcast. I asked me if I've gone live since. I haven't. And I was telling Kelly, I'm like, okay, then we need to do a live then. Because there's something so fun about live. And one thing I've learned through the social media people that we've had is like, everyone gets really caught up of live and like how many people are showing. It's like, no one can tell how many people are there except for you who's hosting it. So you could, you know, Renee, who has Fresh Life Marketing, who we interviewed a while back, she's brilliant in the sense it's like, you can have no one on there be talking because it's going to show up as, you know, a reel later. And it's like, oh my gosh, thank you so much. I love this outfit too. This is from blah, blah, blah. And she goes, because really no one knows. But I think a lot of people get really freaked out about going live and, you know, doing that because everyone's so self-conscious. And it's really, people really just want to know you, really want to know about what you're doing. And I love that you guys do this call because it's kind of like a live and where people have a chance to interact with another human. And especially during the pandemic, it must have been amazing.
Oh my gosh. It's just another way to get to know people. And there were some collaborations there, you know, it's been so fun. In fact, I was just in Austin. I did a talk for the Women's Jewelry Association there last night, and some of the people were there who I've only seen on Zoom. and it was so fun. They come to my Jolt of Joy on a regular basis, and it was just so fun to meet them in person.
Yeah, that connection and meeting people, I love that. I'm still not quite used to it because so many people now watch this versus just listen to it. And it's like, you know them, but you don't know them. And I love it. Cause I mean, I said yesterday, cause my editor was here with us and I'm usually, it's a one man show, but she was here. And I said to her, like, the one thing I really love about what this podcast and what Instagram and going live and what that community that it's created, because I don't know about you, but me at this age, 57, it's not like you meet a whole lot of people and you become friends with them, or you have a community, or you do the gift shows, you're in a showroom, you're out of the showroom. Sometimes you talk to your rep, sometimes you don't. But it's by far and large a very lonely job. And retailers, same thing. And all of a sudden, there's like this lovely community of people that I would have never have met that all also look out for each other. Like I'll see Nathan and Jamie from Sarah and Jane going back and forth, and Barbara from Daisy's Mercantile going back. And it's so lovely. And it's like, I really have like Instagram and going live and this podcast, all part of that has been such a gift.
It's joyful. And I think it's tapping into the fact that we all want one another to be happy and win for, you know, seeing somebody else do well. Mm. There's something about it that it's so joyful for me. And I know, then I also know like, oh, well, that's working for her or him, then it can work for me. It's this wonderful giving and getting that is just, it makes me happy. Whenever I see, you know, somebody online that I know, it's just that shot of joy. That's great.
That way of saying that, a shot of joy. I ask everybody two questions at the end. The first one is, being creative, which you are, where do you find inspiration? I'm not going to ask you where you find balance. Everybody, yeah, you know about that.
Inspiration. I've everywhere. I love doing market research, and my market research is going into stores and galleries and museums, and just seeing what's out there is exciting to me. When I go to New York, I make a point of going to stores and the interaction with people. And I love that. And I also, you know, part of my inspiration of just life is I love being out in the mountains, ideally on a horse.
Oh, amazing. And my last question is, what piece of advice do you have to new entrepreneurs, as well as entrepreneurs that have been doing the retail life or wholesale life for a while?
Don't do it alone. There are, there's so much support and community. You don't have to do it in your own bubble. And I think, one of the things I come across is that a lot of times people are like, oh, I should be here by now, or I should be, making this much, or I should, be at this level, whatever that is. Doing it alone is hard. And there's so much support out there free. And there's also, you can, get a coach or a consultant or take a class or whatever works best for you, but just don't do it alone. You don't have to. And honestly, it takes that much longer to move the arrow or whatever, to move move forward, to do it alone, because quite honestly, tap into somebody who's done it before, because then it's just, you'll move that much faster. So don't try to figure it out all on your own.
I love that. That's become I know I say this a lot, but that's literally become my favorite question. Like, the best nuggets seem to come out of that piece of advice from everyone in the industry that's been around doing this. And it's like, truly, it's, thank you so much.
No, you're so welcome. This is, I shared with you before, I've really enjoyed your podcast. And I feel like I've gotten to know you because of your podcast. I'm one of those people. It's so great to hear. It's so inspiring. That's another thing that I find very inspiring, is listening to how people have created their businesses and what's working for them. So I really love listening to podcasts and hearing about that, because there's never one way to do something.
Yeah. Thank you so much. It's been, I don't know. It's like I said to some, when Iris Fuller's episode, when I was doing Iris, when I was interviewing Iris, it's like, I could not wipe the smile off my face. And it was, have you heard that one yet? She's like, you have to listen to it. She is literally the epitome of why we all love retail. And she had the store at Filamento in San Francisco.
Well, I know Phil, because I lived in the Bay Area for.
She closed her stores, right, I guess, a week before 9/11. And as she says, she never had a chance to mourn her stores because the world was mourning from 9/11. And she literally just kind of disappeared. And we put it out there for, who would you like us to interview? And Nathan from Nathan & Co. is like, Iris Fuller. I'm like, great. Can you make an introduction? He's like, I have no idea where she is. He's like, I just love her store and she gave me so much joy and I shopped there and she's the reason why I'm in the... So damned if he didn't find her. And we got her and we interviewed her, and it was like sitting, listening to her. Nathan was on that call towards the end. We brought Nathan in the middle of it so he could tell her what she meant to him and why he's in the industry from her. And I literally had chills. I couldn't wipe the smile of my face. And I thought, this podcast is what I feel like I'm supposed to do. And it feels like this is, for as many years I've been in the industry, there's a reason why I'm sitting here talking to people, cursing and listening to what we all love, which is retail and the industry. And it's thank you for that, because that really means a lot.
Oh, I speak the truth. I can't wait to listen to the episode. Filamento was, I know exactly where it is on Fillmore Street. I lived on California and Scott when I first moved to the Bay Area. And then I lived on Steiner and Union. And so just that strip of Fillmore, it was a magical.
My old boss, Michael Campbell, from when I was at Fred Siegel, Michael Campbell used to, when we do the San Francisco gift show, and that was like such a big show, we would go to his favorite stores and Filamento. And I could, it's almost like you can still smell the personal care department, but her, just everything about her and her belief of bringing people up through the industry and teaching them and giving them wings and just all of it. She just like her, we open with her love letter to her store that she wrote to it 10 years after. And it's like, I literally, everyone, I had so many DMs from people saying, I'm crying, I'm tearing up, I can't believe this episode. This is why I love retail. It was just, that was hands down, like the biggest gift I could have ever gotten was that interview with Iris.
Oh my gosh, I can't wait to listen to it. And I, I have a feeling we have to play the, you know, the geography of, like, I'm sure we have so many 6 degrees of separation.
I have that feeling. Thank you so much for your time. I am, like, so grateful for Amy making the introduction, being able to chance to meet you in the elevator. And now it's like, I've thoroughly enjoyed our time together.
Me too. And I can't wait for more conversations and seeing you hopefully in New York.
Oh my gosh, I hope so.
And that is a wrap. Three Tower Podcast is produced by myself, Michelle Sherrier, and Catherine Kalu. Our website, where you can find all of our episodes, can be found at www.theretailhorrorpodcast.com. And don't forget to follow us on Instagram at @theretailhorrorpodcast.